Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is James Jackson. This is our usual weekend roundtable, and we have two regulars back, Austin Karp, fine media reporter and writer for Sports Business Journal, John Lewis, founder and editor of Sports Media Watch. Welcome, fellas.
Thanks for having me.
Howdy, Richard.
By the way, I'm recording this on my own. James Jackson, my producer, tells me that he will eventually be here. So this will either be a beautiful recording that you're actually hearing now, or only Austin and John are hearing this recording. We shall soon see. All right, here's where I want to start. And it's news that that broke today, and it involves Tony Romo. CBS has placed Romo on leave following his arrest last week on suspicion of driving under the influence. CBS announced that on Friday. If you're not familiar with this, obviously, I think anybody listening to this podcast knows Tony Romo is the lead NFL analyst for CBS Sports, working with Jim Nantz for many, many years. He received three citations from, and thank you for the AP on this, he received three citations from the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office after a July 23rd traffic stop. He was seen passing cars in a Gore area, according to the story, performed poorly on field sobriety tests, was taken into custody, booked, and released. Sheriff's Office said Romo had an open container of alcohol in his black Jeep. Court records show Romo was later cited for refusing to take a test for intoxication after his arrest. There is a court appearance scheduled for September 21st. There's also body camera footage, which was released. And so, you know, millions and millions of sports fans at this point have seen that. All right, Austin, I want to start with you. This is, to be blunt, a mess for CBS. It's one of their highest, if not the highest, on-air sports people at their company. And now he is on leave. There's no time limit in terms of how long that leave will be. Not clear yet in terms of will they be waiting for that September 21st date. The only thing that we know in terms of CBS's moves is that J.J. Watt, they announced, will join Jim Nantz and Tracy Wilson during Romo's absence. That, of course, leaves a massive crater in the Iron Eagle team. So there's collateral damage on all this stuff. So let me start with you, Austin. Just very, very broad thoughts on the news today that we learned that Tony Romo is now on that we'll call an indefinite leave.
Well, first off, folks, get the Uber app, get the Lyft app. Let's not put yourself in a situation like this.
100%. Well said.
The easiest solve in modern technology. J.J. Watt, I think, will perform well. Everyone has loved what he's done very quickly. So I think there's no problem with the fill in there. But as far as Tony Romo goes, there's going to be a suspension here. There's got to be. There's precedent out there. You look at somebody like Charles Barkley, New Year's Eve 2008. He got his DUI. He got 6 weeks suspension there from TNT. I don't think that 6 weeks, I mean, the NFL season, 6 weeks would be an incredibly long time, but I think there'd be some sort of a suspension. You got to send some sort of message here. I don't think Tony Romo is getting another Corona sponsorship deal or an advertising deal, whatever that was. Remember, he had those back in the, you know, a couple of years ago where he was a Corona spokesman. But it may put them in a bad spot for this NFL media day. I remember last year at that event, like he and Jim Nantz, they hold court at this sort of thing. Everyone gathers around. They talk about playing golf in the offseason and Pebble and all that. It's going to take a completely different tenor now at CBS NFL media day. Like you said, it's going to be David Burson having to give statements, and Jim Nantz is going to have to act and feel differently. And everybody at that day, all the analysts, all the personnel, are going to just behaving differently now because of it.
Yeah, just to give a little clarity for the audience. So CBS annually has a media day where they bring everybody in who works for their NFL teams, particularly their on-air talent, and they invite media. You know, I've been there many, many years. Not much since I've left New York. Obviously, Austin, I assume, will be there. Maybe John has been there back in the day. And, you know, you can interview, as Austin said, like Tracy Wilson, Jim Nantz, Tony Romo, Iron Eagle, Andrew Catalan, whoever their NFL people are. And it's very important for them because not only can they get messaging and promotion for their NFL schedule, but they invite a lot of CBS affiliates who talk to their analysts, and they can get a lot of tape. So when, you know, if you're like in Jacksonville or something like that and watching CBS, you know, your local news can run some interview with Tony Romo about the, you know, the upcoming season. So it's a big deal for them. It's a big media event for them. They've done it for as long as I can remember. And as Austin said, now the whole tenor of that change is CBS obviously and their PR department will try to come up with some kind of strategy in crisis management. But if you're inviting reporters into the room, you know, all these questions are coming. John, again, I'll go to you now. You don't have to necessarily talk about the CBS Media Day, but like broadly, your broad thoughts about the significant news that CBS announced today on Romo.
Well, it's interesting to me because there's plenty of precedent for this particular, you know, transgression. It's not uncommon. Obviously, it's not something you ever want to see anyone doing, but there is precedent for it. Austin brought up Charles Barkley, and that was a big deal. Charles Barkley being off of TNT for 6 weeks, including All-Star Weekend, was a big deal back in 2009. But there was also Jalen Rose, who was off for a bit. I mean, there's a long list of folks who have been at least arrested for DUI. Even Al Michaels was arrested for it, which was surprising to me. I wrote about it at the time and had completely forgotten that that happened. But he wasn't suspended because his was eventually, it was in the off season and he pled down to reckless driving. So look, when all is said and done, there's plenty of precedent, but there isn't a lot of precedent for is this altering a career. Even with Charles, that's kind of a blip in his story on TNT. If Romo ends up getting Wally pipped by J.J. Watt, which I think we all kind of now expect to happen, that would be something I could not come up easily with a parallel for, not for DUI. Now, if you go back to maybe 2014 to 2015, Greg Anthony was the number one college basketball game analyst for CBS and got arrested for, let me make sure I get it exactly right, because it's definitely not something you want to, bear with me, I have to edit. He was charged with soliciting a prostitute back in 2015, and that was it. He never did another game for CBS again. I believe he still hasn't done another game for them. And his career has continued, because he was also working for Turner at the time on their NBA, and has stayed in that role through the rest of that package. But that would be, you know, kind of what we're looking at in terms of if this really goes the way we're thinking for Romo. But that would be pretty, I would say, close to unprecedented for a DUI. It's a serious crime, but it's so commonplace that you just don't see that level of consequence for it typically.
All right, let me go to you, Austin. And John, it's a good explanation just so that we get the adjudication out. Greg Anthony reached a deferred prosecution agreement, and I think the charge was either dropped or mitigated with community service that he eventually did. So that's how that sort of came about. But John is correct. I believe, unless we're both wrong, I don't think Greg Anthony has ever done games again for CBS. But yes, his career did continue, and you see him obviously all the time now on the NBA. You know, Austin, Tony Romo came on like a comet when he started in 2018. And, you know, I raised my hand in terms of I was probably one of the biggest cheerleaders, if not the biggest cheerleaders, in terms of national people who write about this stuff, because he really did feel revolutionary to me in terms of what he was doing. He was fresh. He was interesting. Obviously, everybody sort of knows about sort of the play calling stuff before it happened. But, you know, I really enjoyed Romo as a broadcaster. And I still think I think he's a good broadcaster still. I think it's been very easy the last couple of years to sort of smash him. I don't think he's as bad as his worst critics. But he's also not, in my opinion, now the best NFL analyst. Troy Aikman has, for me, assumed that mantle for sure, and it's quite frankly not close. I bring all this up, Austin, to ask you that, you know, if CBS sports management, like, really is not particularly happy with Romo's work, this would be the time that they can take, they could at least legally perhaps try to extricate themselves from the contract and, whether it's J.J. Watt or somebody else, you know, form a new number one team. I would be very stunned at that, just because, like, It's a lot of money in theory to continue to pay Romo. And these are very, very big positions. And you don't want to rush to make a new number one NFL team. And this is CBS, far and away. This is the most important property CBS has. Not CBS Sports, CBS, big CBS. So I don't generally think that's going to happen. And you guys mentioned, you know, I think Austin, you mentioned Barkley, and obviously he came back and, you know, now is on ESPN. He'd have a great career. But I don't know. I want to sort of throw it out there. Like, is there a universe here where CBS uses this to change it up at the top?
There is a universe. Do I think it's going to happen? No. I want to start there. But if you're thinking about this contractually, if you're thinking about it legally, if there is some sort of morals clause, which I'm sure there is, in Tony Romo's contract with CBS, and they aren't happy, if behind closed doors, we also have to remember that that deal was signed probably, it was before Paramount's guidance took over that company. Maybe they're the leadership, maybe David Ellison doesn't like Tony Romo. Not that he has a say in these sorts of things. But, you know, maybe there is discussion, like, is Tony Romo our guy? They're at $18 million a year, which is what Troy Aikman is making for now, until Troy renegotiates his deal, which is coming up for this season. And he's going to want a lot, by the way. I don't know that he's going to get Tom Brady money, but he's going to get a lot more. But I'm going on a tangent here.
That's all right.
If they want to get out of that, there is a pathway there. But Tony's lawyers would obviously challenge that. But even if you try to get out of that deal, Tony's not getting back. You negotiate a settlement. That means you want out. That means you don't want him as your lead NFL analyst anymore. I don't think it gets to that. I do think that he still does a good job. I think he has that rapport with everybody, you know, going on with CBS, with Nance, with Wolfson. I think he's good with the producers. I don't think he's slipped as much as everyone, you know, fires at him on Twitter for. So I think he'll get a short suspension. I think he'll be back. And it might be the last bad thing we hear about Tony Romo. I mean, think about it. We haven't really heard. He hasn't done much bad in the past. This is the first slip up as a player, a post-career. I think he stays in the long term.
Yeah. No, I mean, unless I'm missing something, reputationally, he's had an excellent one. And like in our world, you know, always is very, very professional and good to deal with. John, again, I'll ask you sort of a similar thing. Again, my sense is that these companies don't, you don't rush to make a move like this big in a quick amount of time, unless obviously the offense is such where, like, you know, you have to cut bait, you know, and this is not, you know, Tony Romo should be criticized to the hilt for alleged drinking and driving. But there are sort of levels in terms of where a company is going to decide to actually outright dismiss versus suspend. They do, though, John, if Tony Romo does stay, I do think there's probably going to come a point where he's going to have to address this publicly, whether he does it on air during an NFL game or somewhere else. But, you know, you do have to let the NFL public, you know, you got to sort of fall on their court and hope they'll forgive you, kind of thing, right?
Well, I mean, it's so difficult because, I mean, why are we saying that? It's, again, I mean, DUI is a terrible crime. It's just that so many people do it. I could reel off a million names. We don't always treat it like the most serious thing. We don't always ask everyone to apologize.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
You know, like you and I, obviously, we follow women's basketball pretty closely. I don't remember ever hearing Diana Taurasi apologize for hers or even it being mentioned after the fact. I mean, it's just, it's not something where you want to say, oh, these things happen, because there's no excuse for it. It's something that results in people losing their lives all the time. But it's so commonplace that I feel like there's some level of selective aspect here because the internet doesn't like Romo, right? People are kind of looking for a reason. And what's interesting to me, CBS, they're saying Romo will not. So CBS did something very interesting. They sent out a statement that said Tony Romo will not be on the air until further notice. And then after that, they sent a separate message, J.J. Watt will be filling in. Because the initial message that they sent out, you could read that and say, well, why should we assume Tony Romo will miss any time? There's 6 weeks between now and the start of the NFL season, right? Tony Romo could take a 6-week leave of absence and still be back on the air in week one. So the fact that they are moving Watt in, to me, it's a little opportunistic, because you could have a 5-6 week, you know, even a month-long leave of absence is sufficient to deal with whatever issues are stemming from this, and he would not miss any time. The fact that they're shifting to Watt tells me they're maybe taking an opportunity to, as Brian Curtis said, take care of a problem, which is that they don't necessarily have the satisfaction with his performance that they used to.
Interesting. Yeah. And I mean, Brian Curtis and Marchand, for sure, I think are probably the two most prominent people in our space who are not fans of Romo's work at all. And you can obviously read their pieces on that. Austin, let me go to you. You know, one thing that, and again, not even close, you know, we're dealing in our little sports media space, and I'll keep sort of repeating that. This is sort of fantasy land compared to obviously like the real adjudication and getting DUI, which isn't all, again, you know, not to be moralistic, but man, people's just families and lives are just changed by that. Dinan Taurasi, by the way, I think did get suspended 2 games, to go back to what John was saying. Anyway, like, you know, the point of this podcast, of course, is to sort of talk about the sports media stuff. And one thing, Austin, that obviously I was thinking about today is, man, if you're Ian Eagle, this sucks because you had a great rapport with J.J. Watt. You are the number two team at CBS, but I think everybody thinks of you guys as a number one team. You just happen to be the number two team at one network. And now at a certain point, at least early in the season, you're going to have to partner with somebody else. That somebody else probably will be coming from a different team, I would guess. And so like this, the Romo decision just doesn't affect the Romo team. It's like the collateral is it's going to affect all these different teams. And that was one thing when I saw the CBS email today, I was thinking about was that, you know, I know, you shouldn't feel sorry for Ian Eagle, an all-timer, and he's a professional. He'll do great. But you know what I'm saying, Austin? Like he and Watt like really had something good going. And now the first couple of games, like that sucks for that group.
It does. And it's a domino effect. And everybody, and it gets back to this room that we're going to be in for the CBS NFL Media Day. And everyone's going to get questions. Well, what's it going to be like working with a new analyst? What's going to be like for you? What's going to be like for you? Everyone gets that new question because everyone's got to step up or move around. And there are going to be a couple of moving pieces. And it just totally changes what was probably going to be, I don't want to say a ho-hum day. Maybe people were more asking about the pending acquisition by Paramount Skydance of Warner Brothers Discovery. I don't think anybody really cares about that now. It just totally changed what everybody is going to have to do, what all the communications executives are going to have to be up on and how they're going to handle that and how the talent's going to be handled. So yeah, everyone's going to be asked different questions. What's it going to be like? What do you think of Tony's DUI? Like everyone's going to get that question. So now all the talent, and it's a lot of them,
great point,
up and down, are going to have to be prepared for that question. So it's kind of a crash course in PR for these folks and how to handle that during that day and during the course of the 6 weeks until the season.
Yeah, no, the CBS, I can guarantee CBS Sports PR is going through every different scenario. They have a longtime PR person there who's excellent at her job, Jennifer Sabatel. But this, you know, this isn't an easy one. And I think transparency is the best. You just, you know, you take that whole day and just let people ask questions and say what you're going to say, because the question is going to come. The one thing I just sort of push back a little, Austin, is I do think that, you know, if you get CBS Sports President David Burson there, the questions probably still will come on this merger, just in terms of like, you know, hey, what is, you know, if the merger ever does go through, like, you know, what's your thought on where this mega company may go in terms of purchasing sports rights, including the World Cup, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I do wonder if, you know, if some of those questions will get there. John, I did want to give you that that question as well, just in terms of an awesome game and an excellent answer on that. Like everybody's affected by this. You know, this is not just we got an issue for the number one team now, but it's every CBS NFL team probably in some way gets a little affected by this leave.
Well, of course, you know, and they're already in a state of flux, right? Charles Davis having moved on because Ian Eagle worked with Charles Davis for many years. He's not even going to be on NFL. He's not going to be available. They can't just plug him in because he's doing college football. So, yeah, it's going to be difficult, but I mean, these things happen. You go ask Adam Amin everything that was going on last year with Mark Sanchez.
Yeah, you know, great point.
You just never know what could happen. I mean, even with Adam Amin, what he's going to have to deal with this year, his longtime partner in Chicago, Stacey King, passing away. I mean, you just never know what can happen, and you have to be nimble as a broadcaster. Ian probably is as nimble as anybody. And so I think, you know, I have no idea who they're going to move into that slot. I really don't. But, you know, it's just going to have to be how it is. And I do think that, you know, the other thing, too, with the NFL, you're talking about this. What are we talking about? Tens of millions of viewers here. It's not going to be some kind of soft landing. Tens of millions, even for the smaller game in the 1 o'clock slot. So it's going to be pretty high scrutiny stuff. And the good thing is that Ian is one of the pros in the industry.
Yeah. So let me. I'm just looking at their list here: Trent Green, McCourty, Archuleta. I'm trying to think of if I'm missing anybody else in terms of who's employed at CBS right now as an analyst, if they're not looking to go outside. You know, one scenario we should, and we can finish up the Romo conversation on this part, that we probably should address, both you, me, and John, is this. What happens if J.J. Watt comes out in those first 3 weeks and, like, literally is, like, unbelievable? Everybody on social media, every NFL writer is saying this guy's revolutionary. This is the best broadcast I've ever heard. He and Jim Nantz sound like they've been working together for 40 years. Like, what happens if that scenario happens?
First off, I think it's going to happen. I do think people are really going to like J.J. Watt if they haven't heard him before. But having him in that 425 window, I don't have to tell you guys, that amps it up. It amplifies it. That's obviously a huge audience there for any of those CBS national games that they're going to have. I don't think it changes things. And we've seen this before. We saw, you know, over at Fox with Olsen. We know that Olsen probably is still better than Tom Brady. Tom Brady's getting better, but he is not a Greg Olsen. So we know that the B is better than the A there.
Yep.
Now, I think it is a great tryout. It's an incredibly good tryout for J.J. Watt. If I'm his agent, I'm thinking, man, this is the best news I could have gotten. He gets a tryout that'll help. If he does well, then he's going to be a hell of a free agent if and when that comes up.
What about you, John? Do you see how, if that scenario happens, and by the way, I do think there'll certainly be people in our space who are going to write that J.J. Watt is fantastic and he's a definitive number one. I have no idea how the on-air rapport will be with him and Nantz. You know, that you just don't know until they're in the booth together. But like Austin said, I don't have any doubt that J.J. Watt will be received well. But if the scenario happens where it's like, you know, Romo in 2018 or Greg Olsen his first year, and people are like, oh my God, like, I've never heard anybody, you know, this good doing this. Do you think that changes the equation at all for CBS if the public is like, this is the best team I've ever heard?
Well, I don't think you can make a change like this on your number one team out of these circumstances. It's just, you know, that to me, this is the NFL. Like I said, there's nothing bigger in TV. These are incredible audiences. It's like an old school Oscars every week on that 425 window. So you have to kind of go with what your plan was from the beginning. To me, the change would have to come in the next year. You need to, you know, maybe you could have Romo finish out this season and then even demote him, right? I mean, there's plenty of precedent for that. You could have maybe Romo and Eagle on that secondary team and see if perhaps maybe Ian Eagle can bring something out of Tony that Jim Nantz has not been bringing out. So to me, I can't see you making that change immediately. And I know a lot of people anticipate good stuff out of J.J. Watt. You know, he's just a human being, right? I mean, let's not make the same mistake every single time, right? Because we have so many expectations. So, this guy's the greatest thing ever. And then he kind of falls off a little bit. It's happened time and time again. It's really hard for people to maintain the same level of quality over the course of, you know, years, over the course of roles. And the bloom eventually comes off the rose for everybody.
Yeah, and I got to raise my hand because I'm fairly certain I wrote a sentence once that I thought Romo was better than Madden. And that was probably me getting a little ahead of my skis, for sure. All right, John, I want to, you guys are welcome to make fun of me for that. I have to accept it. John, I want to get to, Austin has commented about this on this podcast, but I have not had a chance to ask you this. LeBron James, as you know, most, I think, any sports fan in the United States of America knows, is playing for the Philadelphia 76ers this year. And the league was waiting for that decision before it finalized its 2026-27 schedule. I don't think there's any doubt that the Sixers will have the most national windows when it comes to television. But I wanted to get your assessment of this, because when Austin and I were kicking this around, like, it's not only obviously will Philly be of interest, John, and we were talking about this, but like the Eastern Conference now really has changed in terms of like, that's the television conference now. LeBron on the East Coast means you get to see LeBron early. You don't necessarily have to wait for those 10 o'clock games. So I think that helps their viewership on some of those primetime windows. Like, there's a lot going on with LeBron to Philadelphia in terms of TV, and who better to ask than you about this?
Well, you know, I appreciate the compliment. I will say I think NBC will definitely get a lot of them for their Sunday Night Basketball. That's for sure. I do think, let's not overstate how much LeBron moves the needle now. Now, LeBron moves the needle a lot for a 41-year-old player. And the fact that he is still so relevant in 2026, you could go back when they won the title, LeBron with the Cavs, a decade ago. Nobody would have thought LeBron would still be a factor in 10 years, right? So the fact that he's still relevant, the fact that he's still... people still care so much about where he plays is incredible. But if you go back to this past season, there was one Laker game in the top 30, right? When all was said and done, you go through all the games, the NBA Finals, All-Star Game, etc. There was one Laker game in the top 30. That's not to say that he doesn't move the needle, because he clearly does. But the days where, oh man, no LeBron, no Steph, no chance, those days are kind of over. You don't need LeBron. You don't need Steph. It's nice to have them, but, you know, they're not the be-all and end-all. Now, that's not to say this isn't great for the league. It is, as you said, getting LeBron back in the Eastern time zone. All these years, there was a period of time where you had LeBron, Steph, and Kevin Durant, the three most famous players of their era, all playing in the Pacific time zone. LeBron in L.A., Steph in Golden State, and Kevin Durant in Phoenix. That was not good for the league. Now you have LeBron in, you know, those 8 o'clock windows. And I mentioned Sunday Night Basketball before. Not just that. How about those coast-to-coast Tuesday windows?
Yeah.
Where NBC has the 8 o'clock slot and then the 11 o'clock slot. Now you can put LeBron in there. And the other thing, too, the thing that's so great for the league right now is the sheer number of marquee matchups. Obviously, the Knicks are the defending champions, right? So a Sixers-Knicks matchup isn't just, oh, let's see LeBron in New York. It's the championship challenger versus the standard of the league, right? That means more than it otherwise would. Sixers, Celtics, obviously LeBron's rivalry there, Jaylen Brown's return. And then all the, you know, potential finals previews against San Antonio, against OKC. I mean, there's just a ton. I mean, even against Miami and, of course, Cleveland, you have a bunch. So it helps the league out a great deal. The NBA, when it was OKC, Indiana a couple of years ago, coming out of that, there was not a lot of juice. The results of last season plus this offseason has created a number of matchups that, at least from this vantage point, July 31st, not even August yet, at least from this vantage point, has created a number of matchups that I think are very tantalizing to national TV.
John, do you have a guess in terms of what the marquee Christmas Day game will be?
I tend to believe that, you know, the NFL competition is tough. There's only one game that doesn't. So because of the NFL competition, the noon window and the 10:30 window are the only ones where any portion of the NBA is not facing the NFL. And so I kind of wonder if noon will eventually become the main window for the NBA on Christmas. But the NFL did not leave much room for the NBA. It really does. Doesn't leave any room for the World Series or for the college football playoff. They always go out with their best possible matchups. They put Packers-Bears in that 1 o'clock window. That's not a coincidence, right? That's as strong a matchup as the NFL can offer. 2 out of 3 weeks last year, I think, they met in December. Both of them were really, really strong. I don't know if I'd put Sixers-Knicks in that slot opposite that, but Sixers-Knicks to me is, that would be the marquee slot in my view.
And if they want to keep it at noon, the Knicks have had that noon Christmas Day slot for 5 straight seasons. They like the Knicks there.
Austin, I know we've done a lot of this. We've done a ton of ESPN layoffs on this podcast, including you, but let me just like ask you like really quick, like, and this happens, you know, this happens in terms of people having the chance to work out their contract, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But did you have any just very brief thoughts about Carl Ravich continuing to be on air with ESPN for a number of dates while obviously everyone in the universe knows that the company has laid him off?
You know, when you and I talked about this last time, he was my most surprising dismissal.
Yes.
And it was only topped by my surprise seeing him on TV. It was very confusing, as I'm sure it was to Andrew Marchand and the folks and Jimmy Trainers of the world that really covered the talent side of the business. But the man loves to do baseball. He's going to do the Little League World Series still. He just wants to call baseball, and he'll see out the rest of his deal. He's a pro, and it was his decision. I don't know if his agent was advising him otherwise, but yeah, it was surprising to see. Normally, in this sort of situation, you're not even offered that sort of scenario. And if you are, you generally aren't taking it. But this is what he wanted to do. The guy just liked to call baseball, and he's still one of the best in the business doing it.
I actually like it a lot. And like ESPN, as I've said on this podcast now 1,000 times, like deserves your criticism for everything. They could not have fucked up a lot of this stuff more. But I actually like this. Like they made their decision. I'm with Austin. I think Ravich being laid off is a terrible decision. But if the guy's still under contract and wants to work for you, put the person on air. Because that's a quality person doing this. And at this point, you're not dealing with the person doesn't know what's happening. That was the Ryan Clark issue. Like to actually have the guy on air, you know, during a week where you're going to lay him off is just preposterously terrible business. But in this case, I think it's good. And I give ESPN a lot of credit, like for just being like, okay, like, yeah, it's not the most common scenario ever, but Ravich is excellent at what he does, and we're going to put him on. John, did you have any thoughts on Carl Ravich continuing on, at least for a little bit?
It was more than a little bit surprising. I had thought that there was no real precedent for this in the layoffs era of the past 10 years, but it actually has happened. Alan Bestwick and Dr. Jerry Punt were laid off back in 17 and still did IndyCar. ESPN, and in fact, Bestwick, I think, did it another year. So not really sure how that worked out there. But Mark Stein and some of my readers helped me remember some of these. Mark Stein kept working for ESPN after being laid off for a few months. So it's happened. I think it's trust, right? You know, they trust Carl Ravich. They know he's not going to screw them. You know, when UBS laid off Howard Beal, remember he went on a bunch of crazy.
Right. I don't expect Carl Ravich to after the Ned Beatty speech to go on television and lose his mind. I agree.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you have to trust. You have to trust. And 33 years, he built up a lot of trust. And maybe this is his payoff for it. You would think maybe his payoff for it would be not getting laid off in the first place, but, getting a chance. And I do wonder, will they give him a send off? Right?
Good question.
Because Linda Cohen got a send off because she left of her own accord. If she'd been laid off, she wouldn't have gotten a send off. I wonder if maybe, you know, when Carl does his final game, will he have an opportunity to say goodbye to the viewers that a lot of other people, you know, I mean, you're talking Jason Stark, Don Clayton, Ron Jaworski, a lot of people never got a chance to say their goodbyes.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of that will depend on how important it is to the on-air talent. But, you know, I think that's good when you allow someone to do that. And you made the important point. Like, I don't think Carl Ravich is going to just go rogue and go off on the network on it. So first of all, like, it's really not even anything you really have to worry about. I mean, in a world where everybody can get their own YouTube channel, do you know what I'm saying? You can just go off on your employer like the next day. You don't necessarily need to do it on the airways. All right, Austin, two more quick ones here, and then I'll get you both out of here. I read this in SBJ, Austin, in fact, your work. DirecTV and Everpass have a new multi-year deal that keeps DirecTV for Business distributing Sunday Ticket to bars, restaurants, hotels, casinos, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's a pretty big deal to me because, you know, we often think, you know, the people who watch the NFL, like they're watching at home, but no, like go down any major or minor city in the United States, and you will see people watching all this stuff in bars mm-hmm. or restaurants. And how do they do that? Well, they generally speaking do that through this particular pack.
Yeah, obviously this is different than residential. That's still on YouTube TV. It doesn't affect you in your home. But yeah, this is all those bars, restaurants, casinos, what have you, with multiple TVs. That has to be done through a commercial relationship. And forever it was, you know, DirecTV distributing a lot of that. They have over 300,000 locations across the U.S. That's huge, huge business for them, especially, you know, they got out of the residential side because there, you know, there was a lot of cord cutting. And what that bar business turned out to be more business for them than even the residential side, I think, if you projected it out. But what people don't really know the Everpass name yet. That's an NFL-backed, Redbird-backed, TKO Group-backed group that kind of got all the streaming rights for these NFL, for the NFL, like, business at bars and restaurants. And they wanted to get all these bars and restaurants to do streaming. They wanted everyone to get on board, get with the future, and kind of, they were, I think, trying to cut out DirecTV for business on that front, but I don't think that they were able to get critical mass of bars and restaurants to agree to that. So that this extension with DirecTV, it's a multi-year deal, not only sees DirecTV for business stay in business for Sunday Ticket and a lot of other packages for a couple of years, but they're going to serve as an agent for Everpass, which means DirecTV working for the NFL, essentially, to get their customers, these bars and restaurants, on board with the future, with going away from satellite technology and getting into the streaming business. So don't write off this company, Everpass. It's still going to be around. It's still got a lot of heft behind it. But for now, they're going to work in tandem with DirecTV to get this done.
John, do you think, like, the measurement's gotten a lot better, but, like, am I incorrect to think that they still really have cannot measure out of home that great, and that so many people who watch sports, whether they're at an airport or a hotel or a casino, we're never really getting the accurate count?
Well, that's the great irony of this era, right? The ratings are all, you know, kind of inflated while being undercounted. We know the comparisons are all inflated, right? Where they say, oh, this is the most watched ever. And, well, okay, there's a lot more stuff being tracked now than there was 20, 30 years ago. But at the same time, do I think that any of these numbers are actually reflective of the sheer number of people watching? No, I don't. I think you could probably see, I mean, even more viewers for these things. I mean, do I think Game 7 of the World Series last year had only 27 million viewers? No, I think it probably had well over 30 million. I think the NBA Finals, do I think it was only, and I put it in quotes, only 20 million? It's probably closer to 25, 26. Maybe it was closer to 30 million on average. I mean, who knows, right? Because ultimately, it is very difficult to measure any viewing, much less, you know, much less the kind of gatherings that we've seen, whether the World Cup or the finals in New York. There's a lot of people who are not being tracked by traditional Nielsen measurement.
Yeah.
So even as every single one of these comparisons, in my view, is very misleading, and I do believe that people are getting the wrong idea from all these record quotes, the air quotes I'm using, of course, these record numbers. I do think people are getting the wrong idea, but I also think the actual viewership figures themselves, I mean, you're probably coming up short. In some cases, 10, you know, 15 million viewers maybe for an NFL game.
I mean, Austin, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but you have to be able to register the volume of the game, the noise of the sound of the game has to be on for you to be able to, for it to register out of home at a bar, restaurant, sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that's exactly. I mean, a lot of people don't know that. And the fact is, too, you know, how in the world do you, in a bar context, for example, how do you figure out, okay, maybe one game has the sound on, but more people are paying attention to another game, right? I mean, there's all these various, you know, nuances to it. And it's a very difficult thing to try to do. I know before Nielsen was doing it, it was Tunity Analytics. You remember them?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, ultimately, I think only a company like Nielsen that's pretty well established can continue with it, because I think anybody else trying to get into it, it's so inexact. I just don't know how you could successfully do it.
Last one from me, and that is, I wanted to get John's. John, you were at the WNBA All-Star Game, correct?
Yeah, I caught the fever, literally and figuratively.
Okay, so I'm curious, just like sort of how you sort of saw the media, and I want to give a shout out though. to I highly recommend the No Off Season podcast, which is the Athletics Women's Basketball podcast. They do a great job. I recommend it just regardless. But their last couple of episodes have been phenomenal. You know, there's obviously a lot of things going on with the WNBA, a lot of issues, some good faith, some bad faith. They had a really good podcast on the suspension, and rightful suspension, by the way, of the Seattle Storm co-owner, who got 5 games for interacting with those fans. But it's an excellent podcast. And really, like, if you're interested in the WNBA and learning more about it, especially all the stories that exist, like, support places that actually invest the resources to cover it right and are not just covering the controversy of the moment and then obviously moving on to the next controversy of the moment in the sports or political arena. But John, so you were there in Chicago, and at least from, you know, my outsider perspective, like, it seemed like far and away, like, the biggest kind of activation WNBA All-Star game ever. It seemed like there were panels and just media everywhere. What were your, you know, if you can give us like a quick 2 or 3 minute snapshot of what you saw there.
You know, it was interesting. So I was actually based in the hotel where I think the whole league was. Like, when I was checking in, like, right after I checked in, the first person I saw was Kathy Engelbert. Wow. So, you know, I was right in the center of where the league was, but that whole area didn't really seem to have a lot of activation. Like, Indianapolis last year, you could feel the WNBA's presence everywhere. At least where I was, I didn't see any, you know, giant logos or anything like that. Maybe all that was in the loop, but this was a little bit away from all that, kind of where Wintrust is, right? So Wintrust, it was very spread out too. Last year, the All-Star game was all at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. This was Wintrust Arena and the United Center and the Obama Center as well for Media Day. So it was kind of hard to get the sense that you're talking about. So I can't say that I personally felt like this was, you know, that this took over Chicago. I could not tell from my vantage point. All I will say, though, is that arena at the United Center was way more energetic than last year. And last year was energetic. Last year was a good, solid crowd, very well attended, very raucous at times with the chanting, pay them, I don't remember, but pay the players, something like that, at the end of the game. But this crowd was like, I mean, this is not a typical All-Star crowd, right? I've done 3 of these now, 2 in the WNBA, 1 in the NBA. And this was by far the most energetic All-Star game crowd at the Wild. It was a lot of really good energy, which is kind of ironic because, you know, the WNBA, there's so many opportunists, right? Kind of circling around this league, trying to use it for their own ends. In terms of, you know, whatever culture war stuff they're on about. And, you know, ultimately, you would think that the energy was much more negative than it was. But no, it was pretty positive energy across the board.
Austin, were you, you saw the WNBA All-Star viewership numbers, and you actually put out a great chart going back to 2017 on those numbers. And, like, to me, the takeaway is not, you don't need to be a genius to be a takeaway. The growth in the league is absolutely massive. The growth has been sustained. Caitlin Clark turbocharges the viewership anytime she's around. So you got to give her viewership flowers because no one else in the league can do that. But the league still is drawing, like, as they did even in the All-Star game that Caitlin wasn't there. Yeah, of course the viewership dropped, but look at the viewership in 2025 compared to 2017, and it's not close. So multiple things can be correct here, right? Caitlin Clark, absolutely face of the league, but also the growth of the league actually continues as well.
Yeah, it's a rising tide that has raised all ships. She obviously raises it to a different level,
yep.
But it doesn't drop back to what it was before.
That's
these last 3 years that she has been part of the All-Star game, all above 2 million, two of the three above 3 million. You didn't even get above 1 million. You have to look back to 2005 to the last time they did it before she came into the league. And the All-Star game had only done above 1 million twice in its history before she joined the league. So she has just so changed the face of the WNBA and pushed the WNBA itself to the tip of the spear in terms of women's sports out there and what it can do on national television. Numbers are up across the board the first half of the season, 12% for the league. You know, that you got the injection of NBC that has helped, even though it's been like 4 games or so, but bringing on another broadcast partner. We saw that what that did for the NBA as well. I think the USA games are performing well. But, you know, just getting back to Caitlin, 29 games during the first half of the season topped 1 million viewers. Half of them, just around half of them, were for the Indiana Fever. So that team is just, that is the draw right now for the league.
John, I'll give you the last word on this.
Well, yeah, but the other side of that, and of course, there is no denying Caitlin Clark's impact. None. She is by far the biggest draw in the history of basketball. But the other side of that is, are you telling me that, what, 14, 15 games that did not involve Caitlin Clark had over 1 million viewers? Because
There you go.
You know, if you go back, you know, just go back to 2023 when the Aces and Liberty met in the finals. Very high-profile final. Highest profile finals in a long time. Not a single game of that series got 1 million viewers. In fact, not a single WNBA game from 2008 when Candace Parker played her first game until Caitlin Clark's debut had 1 million viewers. So the fact that you have, you know, I mean, that's the thing that's most amazing. For the WNBA now, when you see 1.2 million viewers for Valkyrie's Storm, that you're not phased. Mm-hmm. That's just an ordinary number. It's like, okay, yeah. If you go back 2 or 3 years, if you had gotten 950,000 viewers for a winner-take-all game in the finals, that was a milestone.
Yep.
And so, you know, there's no denying Caitlin Clark's impact at all, and I would attribute a lot of this, obviously, to her. But if you're trying to argue that it's only when she plays that the WNBA does far better than it ever did, well, that's almost as ridiculous as trying to pretend she's had no impact at all. The fact is that I would credit her for the incredible uptick in WNBA viewership for games she doesn't play. I would credit her at least in large measure for that. But the idea that it's only Fever games when we're seeing a league, I'm old enough to remember when, you know, 600,000 viewers for a game on ABC was, oh, okay, that's pretty good. Like, you would write about that, like, in a positive way, because typically for the WNBA, you were seeing 200,000, 300,000. I mean, there was a time when 300,000 viewers for a game was a better than normal performance. So the idea that the league could be where it is now, where you can just, you know, see 1 million viewers for a game, not even involving Caitlin Clark, and it's just kind of nondescript, is incredible. There's really not a ton of parallels. Just feel like if this happened for the Arena Football League or something. This is astonishing, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, her, you know, in addition to everything else, like her, you know, her impact as a viewership draw is just, you know, and an attendance draw is just incredible.
Last thing I'll say about Richard, WNBA this weekend across Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, you have 6 WNBA games on broadcast TV.
Wow.
Incredible.
What a change from, like, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago. Unbelievable. Austin Karp is the media writer for Sports Business Journal. John Lewis is the editor and founder of Sports Media Watch. You can catch all of their audio work on their various different nothing. What a stumbling thing. What I'm really trying to say is both of these dudes have podcasts. Listen to both of them. They do, you know, similar shows as we do here. If you are interested in these, and by the way, thank you. I should formally say thank you, Austin. Thank you, John. As I continue on with this very shitty ending.
Thank you, Richard. This is the ending of endings.
Yeah, I've done better. I've done better. But we continue. If you stay on as I close the show out. If you enjoy these kind of conversations, head to our archives. We just had Linda Cohen and Neil Everett together. They were phenomenal and did not hold back their thoughts on the ESPN layoff. So check that out. That just came out earlier this week. Have done a number of shows on the ESPN layoffs. Austin has been part of those, as well as LeBron to the Sixers, but I was glad to get John's thoughts on that. Jimmy Train was on this podcast on July 18th. We had a lot of different topics on that. Derek Ray was the guest on this podcast on July 14th, the fine Fox Sports soccer broadcaster. And Gino Auriemma on July 6th, the UConn women's basketball coach, was unbelievable, and can't thank him enough for coming on and giving his thoughts on various women's basketball topics. Want to thank James Jackson for all his hard work on this podcast. Thanks to everybody at Odyssey for their support. Most of all, thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.